You are listening to Exploring Satir's Legacy, the Virginia Satir Podcast. I am your host, Michael Argumanis Hardin, and together we will embark on the journey of self-discovery, empowerment, and meaningful connection. Let's dive in. Welcome to this week's episode. Today we have a very special guest joining us. Tiffany McLellan, a licensed mental health counselor from Watertown, New York, is here to share her insights and passion for supporting first responders and other helping professionals. Tiffany is on a mission to ensure that those who have dedicated their lives to helping others don't succumb to burnout. In her work, she's witnessed firsthand the toll that the demanding nature of these professions can take on an individual, but she's also seen the resilience and dedication that drives these helpers to continue their vital work. Today, Tiffany will be unveiling an exciting new initiative, a support group designed specifically for those in the helping professions. This group aims to provide a safe place for healers to heal, reignite their passion, and rediscover the sense of purpose that led them to this noble calling in the first place. In a world where the demands on helpers are ever increasing and the stakes are higher than ever, Tiffany believes it's crucial for these individuals to prioritize their own well-being. As she often says, the world is on fire, and we need to be at our best to do what we are meant to do. Tiffany, so good to have you on the podcast today.
Oh, wonderful to see you, Michael.
Well, I would love for the listeners to get to know a little bit about you first, but then I would love for them to hear what you're doing in New York. Is it upstate New York?
Yes, upstate New York, Western New York. But this program that I'm doing for helpers is going to be available internationally, so it's for any helper, anybody in the helping professions, caseworkers. I really want to keep it, so we're trying to avoid the burnout with especially within these not-for-profit agencies. We all have these concerns, but the more that we can step out of our typical roles, the easier it is to manage our time and to create that work-life balance. But for those that are stuck in the not-for-profit worlds for trainings and connections, they really sometimes don't have much other help to do other than the revolving door process. So,
well, your work with professionals and helping them do better self-care is one of the reasons why I really wanted you on this podcast. But before we dive into that, I would love for the listeners to just hear a little bit about you. What brought you into the helping profession?
So I started out as an engineer, actually, in engineering. Wow. I took my first psych class, and I was in high school. People used to come to me all hours of the night, friends of mine. They would come at like 10 o'clock at night or 11 o'clock at night and knock on the door. And my dad said, after I got my master's degree, he said, I should have known you'd always be a therapist. But I come from a long line of educators, and people within, helping roles within the community. My dad was, on the State Board of Education for a long time, on our local boards of education. And, growing up in the late 80s, early 90s, there wasn't a whole lot of push for counseling. People didn't understand it. There wasn't a lot of, you only knew the jobs that you were exposed to. And so when I took that first psych course, I was like, oh, that's what that is. So I started being able to put actual labels to things that I already knew and understood. And at that point is when I really knew that my passion was more towards not engineering programs and hardware, but was engineering behaviors in people's minds.
Yeah.
And so your
mind was already set up for trying to figure out how things work, but it was really the human being and how it functions that really drew you in.
Right. And then the affirmations of knowing people. I think when you're a deeply empathetic person, it's very difficult because you don't connect with some of the rest of the world in the same way. Mm. So the expectations that are maybe put on you as people that are normally driven into the helper fields, that it takes away some of that some of their power. You know, we tend to shrink ourselves to be able to fit what the rest of the world is expecting of us. But our deep feelings and our deep ability to be able to connect with people in order to help them. And regardless if you're a first responder or in the medical profession or in the social work professions, nursing, you know, we come because to those fields because of our compassion, because of our ability to connect and to be able to really help others. And, you know, compassion fatigue is real.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's about being able to learn how to step back and make your self-care, which we'll get into later, which is more than just taking a bubble bath, right?
That's right.
To put those priorities at need, just like on an airplane, you're not going to put, you know, you have to put your own oxygen mask on before you put on the one next to you. Because if you start to struggle, then the rest of it struggles.
Yeah.
You know?
Virginia Satir often talked about how we suppress parts of ourselves. And under stress, we actually have less connection to our own internal resources. So whenever we do good self-care, we actually open up the avenues to the energy that we have to live our own life, but also to be helpers to other people.
Right. And that's the thing about all of the humanistic approaches is that the therapist is really the container. The helper is the container for that relationship. So your client, your patient isn't going to grow beyond where you are at. As I shared with you before, you know, 2019, my doctor had ordered a bunch of tests. I was having issues with my blood pressure. I thought I was doing a fairly decent job, you know, managing my home, managing my two teenage boys and school, and their activities, and, you know, trying to carve out way for myself to still have meditative time and connection with others. But when she asked me, when I went in later at the end of COVID, because then COVID came and everything else got disrupted, you know,
everything did.
Right. And she says, how come you didn't follow up on this? You didn't get this test done or this test done. And I said, well, you know, COVID came, everything got disrupted. And she said, and I said, you're a busy woman. You have five kids. You understand what it's like. And she says, no, I'm not a hypocrite. And that was like my huge wake up call. To like, you know what? I really have to start putting my money where my mouth is. Not just the not, you know, well, our money, our time, our energy, like those are the only resources that we have on this earth. And so I was coming home or even during COVID working from home. Well, by the time I got done with my list of clients for the day, and sometimes that's 10 and 12 patients, you know, that's because we're just trying to meet the needs. Right. Yeah. Well, you're trying to meet the needs and make a living.
Yeah, and take care of your own family. But sometimes financially tends to go move to the forefront, and really emotionally and the time spent with family takes the back seat because we're caring for others so much.
Right. And one of the things that we're told in graduate school, I'm sure you got the same message, is that in order to provide services for the hardest to serve populations or the populations to have access to resources, you must take insurance, right? So this is an entirely untrue belief system, because what's happening is that by the time then you're getting reimbursed for that insurance, from that insurance, it doesn't equate to a living wage, you know, by the time you pay your overhead and everything else. Like I work with a lot of children. I do play therapy and families, and I love the systems work within families. But to see the reimbursement rate, to see a parent without a child, and the parent is that container within the household, right? If the parent isn't going to grow, the child can only grow to the extent that they are. If you have weekly support, you can certainly help them to push past that, and but it's going to create conflict within those family roles. I do in-home services, and I'll tell you that the reason why I'm doing that is because people have these social masks. So I don't care where I have to go. You know, I have certain weeks that I'm in different parts of the state in New York. But there were so many people that, especially professionals, you know, doctors, attorneys, that, you know, that still experienced the shame that comes with mental health treatment. So they were wanting to utilize the back door. They didn't want to run into any of their patients. They, you know, so this, the opportunity to do in-home strips away that, that mask. You know, I'm coming into your, which can make people feel uncomfortable and vulnerable. But when they really want to do the work and they really want the help, and they know that that's where they're comfortable, like, let me come meet you where you're comfortable.
You know, that's Virginia Satir was often is often known for being the first psychotherapist that met with families as a whole. And she started that work even before she became a psychotherapist. She, when she was a teacher, she started as a teacher, as an educator, and so many of her students were struggling. And she decided to go home, go to the home of the students in the evenings and just talk with the parents, just to connect with them. And she found that by going and visiting the parents at their home, the children started doing better and better in school. She increased this practice and realized, I am learning so much about the family and connecting with them. And that matters as far as motivation for them, but also they understand that I care.
Right.
And later as a psychotherapist, she said she can do a home visit and learn so much more about a client's family and their living situation in that one visit than she could have in months of work.
Right. And during my case management years, I had the same experience. I was an intensive in-home care coordinator. And so I had 8 hours a month with families. And so sometimes that looks like going in and not working directly with the child, but directly with the mom to help her, you know, to talk to her while she's doing the dishes, to help ease that burden. You know, again, all we have are our time, our energy, and the money. Money is a man-made resource, but it's important for this capitalist, you know, environment that we live in. We have to be able to afford and sustain a life. When you're able to do that and they feel seen, they feel heard, then you're giving them a deeper level of compassion that allows them to open up more and to have support and to be able to trust that support is there. I think we see this, you know, a lot in some other first responders, is that they just don't, the public doesn't trust them.
You know? That's a shame. I mean, there's a lot, I mean, we can have a whole podcast on that conversation, but it still remains. There's so many first responders that get into the field for many of the reasons that we get into our field.
Right.
They want to be helpful to other people.
This program that I'm getting ready to start up this Friday, for the month of March, if any helpers join up, it'll be 3 months free. And after that, I still want to keep the financial aspects very minimal, so that, you know, again, those not-for-profit employees can really invest in that for themselves too.
Okay, so are you talking about the helper's perspective?
Yes, yes.
So dive into that. This is a great transition. This is the reason I was so excited to speak with you. I love that you're doing this. What led you to launching this for other people? I'd love to hear the whole thing and also about the program itself.
So Helper's Perspective is going to be a closed Facebook group so that people can go on and be able to post, make anonymous posts, asking questions, and be able to get reflections and feedback from other, you know, well, it's open for anybody in the helping field, like I said. So my intent is to build a community of people that just help and respect and can be able to share their resources and their information and their support for one another, as in, you know, building those relationships is part of Satir's work in the self-care model. Yeah.
Now, when you say helpers, I know that you're thinking about the mental health field, not just counselors though, behavioral, but you have medical, educational, social services. When you're talking about helpers, you're talking about a wide variety of helpers that are out there.
Right. Because we're the ones that are going in with the compassion. You're the ones going into these fields, which makes us the most vulnerable to that burnout, the most vulnerable to unhealthy relationships, the most vulnerable to putting other people's needs in front of our own and living an unbalanced life. Mm-hmm. And so when we really can get some of that back into burnout or back from burnout into a healthy, balanced life, I know from my own experiences with burnout, it was just hard to refuel that passion. So what I found myself doing, there was some couple steps that I took to try and reignite that passion. But, you know, there were, again, when there was those longstanding patients that were just in, I was just like, well, okay, what are we doing now? What are we doing now? There was no unexpected event that then created mm-hmm. that chaos in order to create the change. And when you're burnt out, it's harder for you to dig to those deeper levels, to invoke that. So you end up just providing supportive maintenance, and you're still going home just as empty, but then it affects your finances. It affects your energy level. You just continue to become depleted. Maybe you resent going to work.
And just looking at your flyer, one of the things that drew me in was this idea of caring for the helper, their emotional, their physical, their spiritual health, right? Mm-hmm. That there's these different components. And as a Satir therapist, you know, I talk to my clients all the time about self-care and these eight components that Satir mentions, right? The intellectual, the interactional, the emotional, nutritional, sensual, spiritual, physical, and contextual. So the idea that you see, and I love what you said earlier, I want to quote you correctly, but you said self-care is more than just a bubble bath.
Right.
Is that what you said?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many components to the human being. And it seems as though when people talk about self-care, it is in such a narrow way. Talk a little bit about how you see self-care and what are some of the things that you find that are most helpful for people?
Well, I think first stepping out and taking away the judgment of what self-care is. You know, I see a lot on different posts, self-care isn't selfish, those type of things. But if we even take a step back further and how you would show up for someone you love, you know, are mm-hmm. you going to let your 1.5-year-old eat a sizable ice cream bowl at night before they go to bed? You know, are you going to make sure that they have some kind of vegetables? And, you know, you're going to take care of someone else. That right. becomes the reflection of how you take care of yourself. You know, even, you know, not to get into the spiritual too much, but, you know, when our commandment of love your neighbor as yourself, if you're not providing that self-love, mm-hmm. then you really don't have the capacity. And I didn't believe that for a long time. You don't have the capacity. But when I went through burnout, when I went through what it felt like to really be depriving myself and those effects, because it wasn't affecting me on the outside. Nobody knew, but my blood pressure. One time I came home from work, and I had to go right to the emergency room. My blood pressure was like 200 and something over 130 something. Like it was near a stroke, but because I was utilizing so many other things to maintain those masks and not getting deep enough to the root of the problem and coming up with the courage to face the changes that I needed to make in my life, mm-hmm. which, you know, moving that energy, I know for me, if I wait till the end of the day after I see my clients, I'm so depleted that I can't engage in physical activity. You know, I want to go to bed. I want to like make some food. So I've learned that what I have to do is wait my day much later. So those were times I was working from like 7:30 in the morning till 8 o'clock at night. Because, you know, Friday, my son might have a baseball game, you know, an hour away, and the game starts at 4 o'clock. So I need to leave by 3. So I'm reweighting all of these things.
Yeah, I love how what you just said. There's sort of, even taking naps or sleeping, right? You said you come home and you didn't have the energy to do physical activity or anything like that because you're so tired, that you just are ready for bed. Now, going to bed because as a way of coping, because certainly we get into coping, right? We're so wiped out, we're so tired emotionally, physically, that we cope by sleeping. Coping sleep seems to be very different than just proactively self-care sleep. Right.
Right.
The fact that I go to sleep and get 8 hours of sleep a night is wonderful self-care. But if I'm wiped out, I'm just getting under the covers to kind of just avoid the rest of the day. That's different. And I think people need to understand that so many people climb into bed, pull the covers over their head, and they're thinking they're doing self-care. But this is a reaction to their day, not a response to how they want to enter their day.
Right. So first of all, looking at your behavior patterns, right? Like, what is it? I do best when I can get up and have physical movement in the morning, right? So I get up, I make my bed, I do my physical movement, I have my water or my cacao or whatever it is that I'm feeling drawn to that day, to help maintain me physically. But you know, fresh air, sunshine. I live in the Northeast. Like, we have gray skies more than anywhere else. I mean, in New York State, the average person is on more vitamin D than the geriatric patient in the state of Florida. So, I mean, that to me, when I started learning that, I was like, well, geez, like, what else are we doing? What else are we missing? But you know, also, if you don't have, if you don't have the like the magnesium and the iron and the things that are needed to support you cellularly in order to absorb the vitamin D, then we don't have the opportunity to really be able to offset that. You just end up urinating out all the vitamin D supplements that you're taking because there's no way to cellularly be able to permeate through that cellular wall without those carrier things. So, you know, looking at all of your blood levels and your hormone balances and how they're interacting with one another is very important.
Yeah, you know, I don't often like to use metaphors that are about inanimate objects when you're talking about humans, but one that just fits for me is, you know, everybody has, most people have cars, and they talk about taking care of their vehicle. But if the only thing they did to take care of their vehicle was change the oil, then eventually all other parts of the vehicle are going to start suffering, right?
Right.
And similarly, when it comes to human beings, there are people who, going back to your saying, you know, that self-care is more than just a bubble bath. What I take from that is you are caring for one component of yourself. Maybe physically it does relax your body to be in a bubble bath. Maybe sensually you have candles, you have music. There are things that, but are you taking care of, like you said, nutritionally? And it's not just the food intake. But what is your body? Is your body able to absorb the nutritions that you're trying to give it? And right. So you're really talking holistically about paying attention to your body, what your body's trying to tell you, and really getting a treatment team surrounding you where you're seeing your doctor, right. You're seeing your counselor, and you are proactively trying to care for yourself.
Right. And, you know, our society gauges so much on productivity. So how productive are you? But if you're trying to be productive from a state of burnout, you're not going to make the impact that you're desiring. you know, and you're cutting your own life short, your own lifespan, you're going to have more medical issues. You're going to have more, you know, you're going to end up in the hospital with that high blood pressure, you know, or high cholesterol or diabetes or whatever it is. That's the result from the unhealthy coping mechanisms that you started, you know, the behaviors that you started in order to compensate for the burnout. You know, you go home at the end of the day, if you go right to bed, that doesn't mean that the laundry isn't going to be there. Right? So, but productivity, you know, takes away sometimes from our ability to do the things that we need to do. Cause when you're laying down resting or needing a book, like one of the things that I work with my clients on when we're working towards, developing a good self-care routine is, recognizing when you're giving yourself that time for rest, that you're really allowing for that rest, that your mind isn't still ruminating from your to-do list. Mm-hmm. So if you take that to-do list and then change it over to a to-be list, you know, how are you showing up for yourself? How are you showing up for your others? What is your intentions that you want to create for the day, or for the year, or for the month, or for the week? I try to, like, something that works for me that I try to do is that I see my patients heavily between Tuesday and Thursday. And then Mondays and Fridays are those days to reach deeper into the self-care, to do my admin work, to be able to meet with cool people like you, you know, and really do the things that are going to help to fuel and ignite that passion about really helping others and getting all of us to a better place of healing and not, you know, focusing on illness.
Now I know that you said a little bit earlier that we're going to spend a lot of time on spiritual self-care, but I am so interested in that. So I want to invite you back into that space and say, I'd love to hear what you think about that, because I think not only me, but I think the listeners would love to be able to get prompted. So many people believe that spirituality is only tied to religion. And of course, there's so many people who are spiritual that are non-religious, but all of us are spiritual beings and can benefit from spiritual self-care. What are your thoughts on spiritual self-care?
So to give you some background information, in high school, even I'm going way even back to high school, because I do think that part of who we are as helpers is ingrained in our DNA. It's ingrained in our soul purpose on a soul level. We had to pick a famous piece of literature. And and I had no idea how much I would use this example for the rest of my life. And I chose the Bible. And I said that, you know, the Bible is one piece of work. And like a Shakespearean play, people have different interpretations of that work, right? The interpretation is where religion comes in. The interpretation and how to implement this piece of work into your life is where religion comes in. So you choose a religion that best suits, either is what you were raised with or that best suits your own personal belief system. And it doesn't matter if it's Muslim, if it's Buddhist, if it's, you know, whatever. The point is that you're 30% less likely to have mental health needs if you have a belief in a higher power. And I think when we're looking at physics and energy and the way that people connect and react from one another, you know, when we're talking about energy exchanges or people that are drawn to you or that you connect with, you know, if you vibrate at a very low level, somebody that's vibrates at a very high level is not going to have that attraction to you. You know, that person with the low level is going to pull up, you know, to try and suck some of that energy down. And that's where, like, when we're taking good care of ourselves, we actually naturally increase our vibrational state. And that's right. What like the chakra systems are built on. That's what our, you know, our Eastern, all of our Eastern medicine really is based on, you know, the Buddhists and creating that place of peace within ourselves is about creating that alignment between the physical and the spiritual self.
For me, there's a couple of things when we're talking about spiritual self-care. One of my good friends, John Banman, that co-wrote the Satir model, he says, if you don't have 20 minutes a day to meditate, you need an hour.
Mm.
You know, I've gone and visited him and we've sat in his backyard. And even during a visit, he'll say, okay, this is my meditation time. Come join me. Right. And it's a wonderful, and like you said, different people might use their meditation time differently. But for me, it's a perfect time for prayer. Right. I love being out in nature. I love praying to my creator. And I believe that it is really important to nurture those things. So many people, I know being in the Christian world, there's so many people who profess being Christians. And they really, I mean, they love God and they believe, but they don't do a lot of spiritual practices to nurture that spiritual self, that self-care that, right. that all of us really do need. And that is really helpful for me. Prayer and meditation being one of those things, but just being around my friends that are also spiritual in similar ways, it is so nice to just to have conversations and exchange ideas. And even right here, spending time with you meets a spiritual need for me.
And I totally agree with you. It depends on, you know, prayer gives you, it doesn't matter when it happens. You know, this is the whole thing. It doesn't matter when it happens. Time, again, is only just based upon our own aging, our own, mm-hmm. you know, our own process, our own development. That connection is your connection with your, you know, that's your direct link to your higher power, mm-hmm. to your God. And that to me is, I remember the day that I kind of just said, okay, I'm done. I'm just done. I've tried to control so much of my life to create and to make things happen and to step into a purpose. But when I was able to really let go and to open myself to possibilities and the opportunities to create have vastly changed. The opportunities to heal have vastly changed. So when somebody says to me like, well, I can't, 20 minutes to meditate. What are they looking at meditation as?
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, go back to that rest. Is their mind still racing and turning? Maybe what they need to learn first is a meditative walk. How to have mindful eating. You know, we have to get to a place of mindfulness before you can really get to a true meditative state. And if your mind is in these thoughts racing, the only things that you're doing is you're staying focused on the future or the past. You're not being in the moment. The only change that you can make and is in the moment that you have right now.
Mm-hmm. It seems like there's so much in your life that has led you to this place to have these deep convictions and a desire to help others in their own self-care journey. Is there some bits of wisdom that if somebody came to you and they said, you know, I'm traveling, I'm not going to be able to do this group, but I just need some wisdom about how to attend to myself better. What might you tell that person?
Well, when you're traveling, you're still taking you with you,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you don't get to escape from you.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your intention when you're traveling? You know, if I'm going on a business trip, and I have a meeting at like 8 o'clock in the morning, or I have to meet a family at 11, I'm still getting up at 7:30 to go do what it is I need, you know, outside for a 15-minute walk, something to maintain that consistency. You know, I've found for me, food is a huge trigger to a lot of things and can gunk me up a lot too. So am I eating what my body desires? You know, what my body really wants? Does my body really want that double scoop of chocolate dip Haagen-Dazs? You know, I do have an ice cream fetish. So
a small part of you might.
Yeah. So I might say, I really, you know, and I'm like, well, what does my body really need at this time? Does it need just more water? Does it need, you know, maybe a single scoop with some whipped cream on top? You know, like, what is it that, you know, being in tune and connected with yourself and all the parts of yourself, you know, because self-care is more than just bubble baths. Looking at your mindset around different aspects of your self-care or of yourself, not just nutrition, but like what is your mindset around success? What is your mindset around productivity? And again, being able to utilize those things, are they showing up or displacing self for others? Or are you taking care of what limited time that our physical bodies are here on this earth, you know? The more we push ourselves, and I just learned this too, the anterior medial cortex, I think it's called, in the brain, the more you do things that you don't want to do is directly correlates with your lifespan. So when we are saying things, oh, I got to get up and I got to do this, oh, I got, you know, you're creating cortisol within your body, which then is, you know, going back to the vitamin D and the nutrition, you know, because we need magnesium in order to counteract the cortisol. We need magnesium in order to counteract the vitamin D. So like our body is this intricate web of different things. And when we don't want to do something and we're growing this kind of muscle that says, hey, is it building resiliency? Absolutely. Is it building determination? Absolutely. It's highest in professional athletes, but they also have one of the lowest morbidity rates. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, what are we doing to ourselves? Do we want to, you know, is this about aging? Is this about, you know, how are we growing into ourself, into our divine purpose, for lack of better terminology, our highest self?
Well, one of the things that I love about, well, you know, I gave you this scenario where somebody's traveling. What I love about the group that you're starting is it is something that somebody can tap into no matter where they are in the world. If they're traveling, this is still a group that follows them, and they can continue to tap into it and be reminded of the resources that they need to tap into.
Right. And as part of this, when we get to the point of where there's a paid monthly, part of that I want to incorporate into that is a free consult every month, you know, like as part of your, so you could even pay a year and that's, you know, more than what one consult would be, you know what I mean? Because this is an investment. I really want to create this co-creative environment for all of us to support one another. Yeah. But I think that when you reach out and offering a consult too will help people to work through some of that mindset, some of that things. And, you know, if you can't sleep at 2 o'clock in the morning, you can always go and check your group and say, like, what inspiration are you finding from that today? You know, I plan to go live and to do different like meditations or breath work, you know, ways to be able to stimulate your automatic nervous system to help recharge your brain and your body into healing, into a healing mode, because, you know, our body gets stuck too. And when we have these things like burnout or these traumas or difficult experiences, we still hold them within our body, and we need to be able to move that through us in order to, you know, be our best self for our patients, our clients, for the community, for the people that we serve, regardless of what our title is.
So if people are actually looking for more information, because they, you know, there's some people that are auditory, they could listen to a podcast and go, oh, that's great, I'd like to do that. But if they're wanting to go and read more about this or get one of your flyers, how can they go about getting the information for this group?
You can connect with me on my Facebook group or my Facebook website at Get Perspective Counseling and Coaching, or on getperspectivecc.com. I'm still trying to figure out, I am not, you know, I was in engineering back in the early 90s, right? The technology that's now, like, I was on DOS and like Java was like, you know, and it's supposed to be more user-friendly. I probably overthink it. So I'm trying to still figure out how to set all of those websites and get this information up on my website, which is getperspectivecc.com. You can also email me at Tiffany S. McLallen. That's TiffanyS. McLallen, McLallen, @gmail.com.
Okay. And I'll put all those addresses in the notes of this podcast, just so that you didn't have to listen to it just to write it all down. I'll actually have those listed in the notes so people can quickly find you.
Thanks, Michael. I appreciate that.
Tiffany, it's been wonderful to have this conversation with you. Any last words or thoughts that you'd like to give the listeners?
No, I'm just really looking forward to reaching more people and connecting. You know, this is my word for the year, is creating connections. So I'm super grateful and appreciative for your time and for connecting with me, and have loved this conversation. I hope we can do it again sometime.
Great. And Tiffany, thank you for being the spirit that you are. You're giving to the world, and it's a better place because of the work you do.
Oh, thank you.
Have a blessed day.
You too. Bye-bye.
As we conclude this episode of the Virginia Satir Podcast, I want to leave you with a reminder that the journey of self-discovery and transformation is ongoing. Virginia Satir's wisdom continues to inspire us to nurture healthier relationships, foster open communication, and embrace personal growth. Remember, you hold the power to create positive change in your life and the lives of those around you. Well, that's it for today's episode. See you next week. Thanks for listening to the Virginia Satir Podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us a review wherever you listen to the podcast. And share this with a friend. Also, for more information on Virginia Satir, you can go to satirglobal.com or liveconnectedtherapy.com. Until next time, be kind to yourself and to others. You are a miracle.